Hey everyone, this is Doug from QS Cast, bringing you your weekly financial podcast, short and sweet about the things that matter to you. I'm joined here today by Kelly Reed.
Hi.
And Chaz Volpe.
What's up?
And we are going to be talking about the big stack of spoilers we got from Battle for Zendikar. Lots of things to talk about. We're going to try and get everything in this half hour here. But first, I want to talk about PAX Prime. I'm going to throw it to Kelly because, Kelly, you did one better than just read about PAX Prime. You were at PAX Prime this weekend, right?
Yeah, it was excellent. It was in downtown Seattle at the convention center.
So tell me what it was like being in the room while they were debuting those cards.
I was mayhem. It started out with the Wizards of the Coast rules manager, Matt Tabak, rhymes with payback, as far as I'm aware. He was in a semicircle of tables with guys like Will Wheaton and Trick Jarrett and Aaron Forsyth and Mark Rosewater, spellslinging against random people from the crowd. All the Wizards of the Coast employees were playing as Eldrazi, and all the general public were playing as the Zendikari allies. And every time the allies would win enough games, they would reveal a new spoiler. And so at first they were pretty uninteresting, commons, uncommons, things like that. But cool. But then towards the end they started spoiling some really bonkers stuff. I think the last thing they spoiled was the giant Ulamog, complete with a oversized version of the Ulamog card, approximately the size of me, hanging out in the lobby. So when they announced Ulamog, people went bonkers because he's obviously crazy. But the real fun started about 7:30. They started just they seated people in like a theater setting, and Will Wheaton and Ashley Birch, who are sort of internet celebrities and real life celebrities, and also apparently huge Magic fans, were talking to guys like Mark Rosewater about just sort of what's going on in Zendikar and talking us through some spoilers. And that's when they started dropping bombs on us. They showed us a picture of Gideon, just like the art, and the Planeswalker frame just barely showing. So people obviously went crazy about that. Then it started fading in every ability one by one, and people just went bananas. The card is so good, and they really pushed the power level on it. And it confirmed beyond a shadow of a doubt that allies are going to be a real theme in this set, as one of our forum members called that a long time ago. He nailed it. But anyway, people went crazy for Gideon, and then they just kept upping the ante. They showed the new duels, and people went crazy. And then they told us about Zendikar Expeditions and how they'd have 25 of them, and here are the 5 new duels in foil and full art, and people went even crazier. But then it was like, wait a minute, did you say 25? And they really over-dramatized it, because, you know, Will Wheaton's an actor and he's very easily excited. So he was just overplaying it. It was hilarious and fun to watch. And then they were like, okay, well, they didn't tell me what the other 20 were, just the full art new duels. And so, hey, good night, everybody. And he walked off stage, and then everyone was just like, oh my God, are they just not going to tell us? And then, just a few seconds later, Ashley Birch comes out and is like, oh, did they not tell you which ones were going to be the other 20? He's like, no. And she has 2 cards in her hand, and she's like, well, they told me. That's awkward. And she shows it to him. He loses his mind. And then Mark Rosewater, I believe, he came back out, and they showed all 10 of them on the screen, and people went bonkers. I mean, it was bedlam.
That sounds great. And I have to, you know, these are going to be all foil, full frame. They're a backwards way of Wizards introducing a super-duper secret ultra-rarity, but the feeling from the Magic community has been overwhelmingly positive, except for the complainers who would complain about a $100 bill in packs. Kelly, why do you think the overwhelming response is positive here?
I mean, it's obvious. They're just beautiful pieces of art. That's a theme that runs throughout this entire set, is that the art direction and the creative team, they're operating on a new level. And that's not praise I'll throw around lightly. I mean, I'm the ultimate Magic fanboy, but I'm not just going to dispense needless praise. But after seeing some of the art from this set in super blown-up giant mode at PAX, like plastered all over the world, the world of Zendikar just looks so rich and so detailed, and they spared no expense, and they didn't cut any corners, and it was just phenomenal. So it's because this whole set is wrapped just in beauty, and these are cards people want. they're super desirable. I mean, everyone, these are the coolest fetch lands ever printed. They've got, yet again, new art. They're all set on Zendikar. The art is all completely original for the Shocklands too. And, they're perennially useful cards that are played in almost all formats. And there's just no reason that if you're the kind of person who wants the best of the best for your deck and your collection, you need to own a playset of all 20 of those. I think it was kind of a mistake to include the in-set dual lands, the five basic duels, I think I'm going to start calling them. Those just aren't that good outside of Standard. They're great for Standard, and I think they occupy a really valuable design space, and we can talk about that in a minute. But they're useless outside of Standard. I'll probably play them in my Commander deck because I tend to run a lot of basics because I don't like getting blown out by Blood Moon. But, like, outside Standard, Casual, and as crappy replacements for real revised dual lands, I don't see them seeing any play in Modern or Legacy. So by virtue of that, their upside is pretty limited. People don't foil out their Standard decks with cards this rare. Overwhelmingly positive reviews because the cards are just spectacular. And, I mean, I'm not a deck foiler. My cards are for utility only. But as an investor, I think that there will be opportunities to buy these cheaper than they should be. It's really hard to math out what they're actually worth because there's really no precedent for it. But looking at the most expensive Mythic Rare in a set and doubling it is like your absolute Mythic Rare foil, rather. And doubling it is approximately your floor. But realistically, looking at the original foil printings of these cards, or even the modern foil printings of these cards, and doubling or quadrupling those is where we're looking at. I mean, a Khans of Tarkir Polluted Delta foil is $100. So you have to imagine that this, just by virtue of sheer scarcity, desirability notwithstanding, it's going to have to be more. And I can pretty much guarantee that these will be more desirable than a pack foil for people who are tricking out their vintage decks. I mean, if you have a vintage deck that runs Fetchlands, and I think that's basically all of them, you're playing Beta Black Lotuses, Summer Dual Lands. I mean, these are the fetch lands you need. There's no question about it. They are the ultimate. So that's giving something like that to the player base who's really eager to have something super premium and doing it in a way that doesn't affect the set itself and doesn't affect the gameplay of the set in any way, because you don't need these to play Standard. You can't even play half of them in Standard. I think they checked all the boxes for doing a super premium kind of priceless treasures kind of release.
Chaz, you had done some research about what these cards are pre-selling for, because when we were preparing for the cast, we were talking about is what price is underpriced for these and when would somebody jump in. Share with us what you found about pre-sales on these and whether you think that that's an accurate price or not.
Sure. So I tweeted this out yesterday. I happened to just stumble upon it when I was perusing around eBay for Battle of Zendikar stuff, just getting like a gauge of what stuff could be selling for. And I came across one listing that had two listings, and one of them sold for $199.99. And I was, this is for one of the Expedition Steam Vents, so not to be confused with Scalding Tarn. So this is going to be one of the Shocklands. And then I was kind of surprised, so I typed it in, and actually a few more listings came up. So we have the $199.99 listing, and then the three other listings are ended at $174.99, $169.99, and $159.99. So that's just the Steam Vents. I understand it's a blue Shockland, but right now on Star City Games, so just to have a baseline, that might even be a little bit more than market value. A original Guild Pack Steam Vents is $130. So just to give you guys a little bit of a comparison.
Chaz, do you think that at that price it's a good price to buy in, or do you think that these prices are going to go lower?
Well, Kelly, you had some initial numbers behind how rare these are going to be. So essentially for $30 more than an original Guild Pack foil at $130, you're getting a, I would assume, ex- pretty rare full art foil version of the card that honestly might be more scarce than just a guild pack foil steam vents at this point.
Yeah, rarity notwithstanding, they're significantly more desirable. I don't really hear people caring about the original foil printings of things like that. It's the same art. It's not interesting. And then if you're the kind of person who's pimping out your deck, these are just categorically more desirable. So I think that starting in the single $100 range for the shocks and the less desirable fetches seems reasonable. I think sub $100 for the ones that are standard legal, maybe even as low as 50, also reasonable. But I think that the blue fetch lands specifically, it's really hard to just pull a number out of thin air, but I'm going to try to call that they're going to be at least the minimum $200 to $300. They're just, if you're completing play sets of these, just remember that in order to get 25 copies times 4 of these, to get 100 of these, essentially, a playset of all of them worth, you need to open about 21 or 22,000 packs to get that many. And no, you're not guaranteed to get exactly 4 of each, but that's how the math basically works out. So there's no direct correlation between like the cost of the packs and the value of the set. It's just a little too fuzzy right now. But like you can imagine that if you're opening 22,000 packs of Magic cards and you're only getting 100 of these, you know, these are pretty scarce. So the people who want them are going to want either one or four, and the people who want four are in for spending a five-figure amount to get a playset of the 20 that matter. And again, I'm really sad that there's 20 that matter out of 25, because it's a real loss for everybody at a pre-release when some guy opens, like, the black-red new dual land when you could have opened a polluted delta or a scalding tarn. It's like, well, did you want $500? How about 50? And it's like, no, you're not going to complain, but you're looking like, whoo, man. Just like when you open a bad foil mythic, you're like, wow, what a waste of a foil mythic slot.
Well, I remember back in the original Zendikar with the priceless treasures that you know, people were open stuff that was cool, like Guardian Beast. People can hit gather around that one. And they'd be like, well, Guardian Beast is cool. It's like 35 or 40 bucks, but it could have been a Candelabra of Taunos or a Mox Jet.
Yeah, and they didn't really advertise the Timeless Treasures the first time around. Like,
not only didn't they advertise it, they disavow its existence to this very day. We tried asking them about it at PAX, and you know, Mark Rosewater, with whom we had an extended conversation, was just like, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, I know it happened, but we didn't do that. Like, that's their party line. Wasn't us. Like, we know it was you, but it wasn't them. That's what
some rogue collator at Cardamundi in Texas slipped all these cards in.
With more dollars than cents, it seems.
Yeah.
Because where did these all come from?
They, some sort of Robin Hood, unlike the dark beta printing scandal at Cardamundi, where somebody printed off a whole bunch of old rare cards and kept them themselves. This is some Robin Hood releasing them to the public. But anyway, you guys brought up Scalding Tarn. I wanted to come in with some prices on this. We are a financial podcast as well as a financial gossip podcast, but foil Scalding Tarn is about $150. I'm going from completed listings on eBay. It's much harder to find a price for a Japanese foil Scalding Tarn. They're very thinly traded on eBay. Most of the ones that sell are due to best offer listings that sell. So what I'm going by is the rule of thumb of a 10% discount. I'm pricing them at about $300 for a Japanese foil Scalding Tarn. Bear in mind that the Japanese foil market has gotten a lot more efficient now. Tomoharu Saito is doing a lot better job in Japan of collecting up these foils and bringing them over, so there's much better access to them here. But if you're looking for a touchstone on what your full art, full frame Scalding Tarn should be that you luckily opened up at your pre-release, I think $300 is a good starting point, and I would say that if people are looking to get these, if you see a price under $300, if you see like the $200 pre-order price and you think there's a chance that they're going to honor it, I think snapping on it at $200 is a good price.
I think I would agree. I think I agree with that too. I think, so this is how I would gauge it. The blue fetches probably start in that area, $300 plus. Maybe, you know, you somehow get a deal on that, good for you. The non-blue fetches 200 and below, for sure. And then the shocks closer to maybe 100, maybe 1-150 range, and then the slow lands probably like 50.
And I see the slow lands shaking out to be, I think that they're going to sell a lot more slowly than people think, because people who open them, they're going to want scalding tarn prices for them, and they're going to have to learn that when you put a price out to the market and nobody takes it, you either pull your item off the market or you lower the price.
Yeah, no one's buying the five new duels in full arts like with cash. I just don't see it. Like,
and then they are carriages that will turn into pumpkins in a year when those rotate. So we have to. People know that there's a clock ticking. I think you guys.
Yeah. Chad, when they drop to like
really
20 bucks.
Good hierarchy. Yeah. We know that the enemy fetches and the allied fetches both get played in eternal formats like Legacy and Vintage. Those formats have no use for shock lands because they have the great revised duels. Shock lands are going to be valued in Modern as well, but there's going to be less of an appeal. The new duels, new duels, whatever we're going to call them, slow duels, tango duels, any name I'm going to take right now. Definitely, they don't have an application outside of Standard. There's no use case to run them over a Steam Vents or another shock land in Modern. It's always better to pay life to get better speed. I'm not telling any of you listeners anything new, but if you open the green white new duel in full art form, you know, good for you. But I would, if I had one, I'd say no reasonable offer will be declined on them.
Agreed completely. When they rotate out of Standard, I know we're talking way in the future here, and the full art foils are dogs. Yeah, then I'll buy one of each for my commander decks. I'll still play them, but like they're not worth a huge premium over the pack foils at this point. Like if they're $5 lands, the pack foils are $10. These are $25, maybe. You know, that's fine. I'll take that. But
yeah,
if
I'm not going
to $100,
go on record
for
the price on those because I don't want to be proven wrong on that.
I'll take a stab at it though. I don't mind being wrong. I like being wrong in public. I learn things. I think that these dual lands are pre-selling for way too much. I mean, they're $10 for the non-red ones, $8 for the red. They're great, but they're not format-defining, and especially when you've got tri-lands and wedge color cards that actively punish you for trying to play with stuff like this. I mean, yeah, they're going to be good, and everyone's going to need their playset eventually, but they're not so crazy good that you have to rush out and get them. I mean, I think we're going to see a similar trajectory to what we saw with like the Scars of Mirrodin fast lands and the shock lands, is that while they're in their prime, the ones that are most metagame desirable will be from $5 to $10, and then, or, you know, sorry, $6 to $10, and then the ones that are less so will probably be like $3 to $5, and then as it gets closer to, as Battle for Zendikar stops being printed and drafted, we'll see the prices drift up so that the lower tier ones are priced as what the higher tier ones were, and the higher tier ones tick up proportionally as well. I mean, that's just been the cycle we've seen.
Chaz, you brought up the temples also as being a good example of these new lands that are going to rotate, living in a new land of mythics in these. Theros was a block that a lot of people sat out on, myself included. Chaz,
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Myself as well.
Block was a dog.
I don't blame you.
You know, you look at a card like Temple of Enlightenment being $250 right now, even being played well. I know we're nearing the end of rotation, but none of the temples broke $9 or $10 for very long. They all sat down around $4 to $5 for most of their life or less.
I think the one that kept a price over $10 for a decent amount of time, I think there was only one, and that was Malady.
And that is the black green one.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, those are from thinly open sets compared to Battle for Zendikar, where everybody's going to be wanting to open these.
Right.
Chaz and Kelly, I agree with your assessments. I think that these lands are overpriced on pre-order now. That is not to say that, it's not a good price if you're not intent on waiting for them to come down. If you want to play with them as soon as they're in Standard, absolutely, I think you should pick them up at $8 to $10. That's a cheap price to pay for assurance.
Yeah, $30 completed on eBay for the black green or the black red Tango Land or Slow Land or whatever you want to call it is not very exciting for me. I don't like that. I would not buy these for $30, especially the black red one. And yeah, I agree with everything that Kelly said. And I thought I'd never say this, but I'm gonna miss the Scrylands. I really am. these are cool. Like, I understand they're fetchable. You know, they're a good budget option to people, you know, in EDH decks or, you know, maybe modern. I don't know. I mean, but I don't really think I like this more having these fetchable than just fixing my draw.
Wait. You know, and I hated the temples when they were first spoiled.
Yeah, I wasn't
a real waste.
Yeah.
I've come around.
I have too. I mean, for someone that has played Heroic, yeah, whatever, yeah, sure. Bash me for playing Heroic. It's a big deal. But, yeah, playing Heroic and being able, just an aggro deck in general, I guess, and just being able to fix your draws was actually kind of nice.
Chaz, speaking of aggro decks, one of the cards that you were most excited about with the new spoilers was the new Gideon, the new Planeswalker. Walk me through why that card excites you.
It does excite me, and I'm sure it excited you too, Kelly, because you were right there when it was spoiled, and rightly so. So when we try to evaluate Planeswalkers, this 4 converted mana cost is where we want to be for having any outside shot of seeing play in Modern. So usually outside of maybe like a Fringe, Tezzeret, the first one. Which one was that, Doug? The first Alara Tezzeret? Seeker?
Seeker, yes.
Seeker, right.
Seeker, the Seeker of Time Vault.
Yeah. Outside of some Fringe play of that, really we want to stick to 4 mana. So it passes that test off the bat. It starts with a pretty good loyalty and 4. And all its abilities are value. So it becomes a 5/5 human soldier ally creature. It's indestructible and prevents all damage. So it can become a massive creature when you need it to attack. Can get all the benefits from the new keyword rally, which is basically the ally's ability but tweaked a little bit that affects all creatures. So he would be included. For 0, you get a 2/2 White Knight ally creature token, so again, you can trigger the rally clause of, or ally clause if you're, you know, if you want to jam these into a, what I think is going to be a viable ally deck here soon in Modern. And yeah, it's, at worst case scenario, you have a extra, and you just -4, and you get an emblem, and you can just go to the red zone. I draw the comparison to the first Elspeth. That's going to be what I compare it to.
And we've seen Elspeth where she was very good in Standard. Of course, she could jump a guy. Gideon can't. But she was very well played. She continues to see some Fringe play in Modern. One card that excites me with Gideon is Tragic Arrogance. We've seen Tragic Arrogance come up. It is the card for the listeners. Choose one of each non-land permanent type for each player. The player sacrificed the rest. So you get to play Highlander. But it's great to think that you could play Gideon on turn 4 and make a knight. You're not going to animate him and attack because he has Summoning Sickness. But so you make a knight on turn 4. Turn 5, you cast Tragic Arrogance. You choose your knight as your creature. Your Gideon is your Planeswalker. And then after Tragic Arrogance, after you've blown away the board, you animate Gideon, you swing in for 7. I'm thinking that's going to be a pretty good play. I don't know that it is good enough to be playing Tragic Arrogance on its own with Gideon, but we have seen the format already running Tragic Arrogance. So I think, you know, when you see a 2-card combo like that, it's cute, unless one of them has already been proven to work.
Unless the other one is one of the best Planeswalkers ever printed.
Yeah, you know, and I think the other thing that comes to mind for me is Boros Reckoner and Blasphemous Act. People who are like, that is just so stupid of a combo that will never work. And then, no, lo and behold, Boros Reckoner was a good card on its own. And people started running the one Blasphemous Act because every now and then you can just 13 your opponent out of nowhere. So there is precedent for running maybe suboptimal combos, maybe cards that wouldn't be great enough on their own. And this is just to the people out there who are saying, well, Tragic Arrogance is not good enough. Gideon may not be good enough on his own. Together they might be good.
They're both...
Sounds good to me.
I think they both stand on their own. Ryan Overturf, one of our staff writers, was playing and testing for the Pro Tour, and his team said that Tragic Arrogance really outperformed expectations. And it didn't do crazy good at the Pro Tour, but in subsequent events, when the metagame was a little more defined, Tragic Arrogance worked out to be a really savage card. It fits with Gideon on curve just perfectly. It's about, they're two peas in a pod, really. And each card on its own is very, very good. I mean, we talk about how Gideon is, you know, if he eats a Ruinous Path, which is the new sorcery speed hero's downfall, then you're still getting a 2-for-1, because Ruinous Path is a sorcery. They can't cast it, like, in response to you trying to make him a creature and blow you out and mess up your whole turn. I mean, they have to spend a turn dealing with your Gideon, and you got a 2-2 Knight, so at least you're, you know, you have a board presence whether or not they kill Gideon.
Yeah, just one last kind of thought on Gideon. I don't think it's honestly just delegated to allies. I think he's good enough to see play outside of an ally deck, and that speaks volumes.
Yeah, there's no reason to think that the allied part of him needs to be considered when doing a baseline analysis of his power level. It doesn't. He's just good as a dude, and a tribal synergy is pure gravy.
And I'll bring up Xenagos the Planeswalker here. Xenagos also could spawn 2-2s. Granted, they had haste, but they didn't have a tribal synergy that was relevant. Xenagos had an irrelevant +1. It would just add mana to your mana pool. I very rarely saw people activate that. But Xenagos proved himself well as just a 4-power threat that kept pumping out dudes every turn. Gideon here is along the same lines with a little bit of upside. I will say at $30, I think Gideon is a little overpriced on pre-order, and my reason why is that we are going to see a record amount of Battle for Zendikar open. People are going to come out of the woodwork to play in the pre-releases. This is going to be a heavily open set, and it's going to take a whole lot for any cards in this set to really make a standout price.
Yeah, I mean, when you're, opening up, how much was it, Kelly? What, 29,000 packs or something absurd like that to fill a playset of Fetchlands or something like that? Full Art Fetchlands?
Yeah, it was in. Kelly had reported it was in terms of 10 cases or so, or more.
So the math is 21,600 packs will get you about 100 of these full art foils, which means 25 times 4. So you won't get literally a playset, but you'll get a volume opened that correlates to the size of a playset of all 25.
It's a lot of packs.
You know, we were talking about cards like Mantis Rider and Siege Rhino from cons. Those are cards that have been heavily played, but they never even broke the $5 mark for very long. They've dropped down to only a couple dollars. It's going to take a lot for any rare to break high prices in Battle for Zendikar, because people are going to be coming out of the woodwork to play this format. And also, I think that extends to Mythics. We look at pre-release cards have also brought down the price of the Dragon Lords, so a foil Ojutai is only $25, but you know, we haven't seen the all-star Mythic $50, $70, $80 chase Mythics that we saw before. So I don't know that $30 on any Mythic in Battle for Zendikar is a good. We've been talking about the really cool mythics in this, but one of the great things in pre-order season is looking for sleeper cards that people are going to let slip for 50 cents. You know, Hangerback Walker was one of these for a little bit of time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hey, if you missed out on that, there's plenty more opportunities to hit. I wanted to throw it to Kelly. Kelly, you have picked out one of the sleepers in this set, currently selling for 50 cents, and why don't you tell us about that?
So that card is Guardian of Tazim. It's a 4/5 flying creature that costs blue 3. It's got a landfall ability that taps a creature. It's got an island fall ability that if the creature is tapped that way, it doesn't untap during its next untap.
So kind of like the Frost Titan ability from old.
Exactly. I like to call that ability icing something. It's sort of like the Detain ability. And I think that there's a few reasons why this 4/5 flyer is relevant. One of which is he's on curve with Dragonlord Ojutai, and he trades with Dragonlord Ojutai. So if you're playing blue but not playing white, he's a good way to clog up the sky. Second, I'm using Dragonlord Ojutai as the example here because he's pretty much the definition of what a 5-drop needs to be in blue and other colors. So he, when it tapped, does not have hexproof. So it's very reasonable that your opponent will just not attack him into your Sphinx, and if he does, then you can just chain fetch lands to keep him tapped down until you can find a proper removal spell, and therefore his shield never goes back up. So that's just one reason specific to the metagame, and I also think it's just an objectively powerful card. A 4-power flyer is not a 5-power flyer, but the fact that it's basically turning your lands into a removal spell is really valuable. One of our writers today compared the effect to Crippling Chill, which is a blue instant for blue 2 that taps a creature, ices it down, and you draw a card. So you can kind of say, well, this fetch land is not costing a card either, and it's icing down two creatures if you can afford to crack it on a subsequent turn to get the landfall trigger. So the ability to lock down a board with this guy, either on defense or to remove blockers, it's pretty scary. I think it just, for some reason, it looks like one of those cards that should be a junky draft-only rare, but or it looks like it should be an intro pack rare. And earlier in the week, you guys, we discussed how we thought this was probably going to be one. But Chaz, you said that it is confirmed not.
No, it is not the intro pack rare. That's going to be Drowner of Hope. Was the one that we didn't know. It's a Eldrazi, 6 mana, 5/5. It gives you one of those colorless Eldrazi Scions, and you can sack an Eldrazi Scion to tap a creature. So it was spoiled that that's the last intro pack rare that we are going to see.
And this is a card that triggers off of landfall, and something that comes to mind for me is that it looks like they are trying to get more landfall triggers in Standard. The last Zendikar set had landfall. You could enable it with fetch lands, but it looks like they're really trying to push more things. Like with Nissa's Revelation, I think is the name of the six mana sorcery. Look up, find 3 lands, gain 7 life. We're going to be looking at times when you have multiple landfall triggers in a turn. God forbid you have Oblivion Sower and you get 6 or 7 lands that have been removed over the course of a game. That's a whole boatload of landfall triggers. Presuming that we see more ways to trigger landfall, I'm feeling confident that this Sphinx could tap down stuff for quite a while.
Yeah, it's pretty good at its current pre-order price. I know we were mentioning earlier that it's going to take a lot for cards to maintain some semblance of a price over, you know, a dollar, because, you know, we've seen, like you mentioned, Doug, cards like Mantis Rider, which is a very good card. Unfortunately, cons has been open so much that it's just kept its price depressed. Maybe that will change, but I mean, once the fetch lands start going up in value again, people are going to go back to cracking boxes, and then we have that kind of vicious cycle, keeping cards like even Siege Rhino down to a reasonable price, which is good for people who like to play Standard. You know, this kind of stuff, when they insert even cards, especially like this stuff like Expedition, it's going to keep cards, Standard cards down, and it's good for newer players to get into a less expensive Standard format. That being said, there's still going to be a good window of opportunity on getting in on pre-sales and kind of riding the hype train, I guess. So Guardian Tazim seems good at 49 cents. I thought it was going to be a intro pack rare. It is not, so it kind of dodges that bullet. I'm not seeing anything too exciting. I kind of, you know, I just get that feeling when it comes to pre-order prices. In Origins, I just had that feeling about Thopter Spy Network. I mean, I was fully well ready to bulk them out at 10 cents per copy, but I kind of just felt like it was a card that's worthy of more than 49 cents. Like, I thought it was better than Alhamaret. You know, like, so that was kind of my reasoning. I'm not seeing the card that's popping out at me right now, but I do like Brood Butcher. It was recently spoiled. So it's a 5-mana Eldrazi drone. It's devoid, but its casting cost is 3 generic and a black green. It's a 3/3. When it comes into play, it puts one of those 1/1 colorless Eldrazi Scions. They can sack for a generic. And it also has an ability, black and green, sack a creature. Target creature gets -2/-2 and until end of turn. And honestly, my only reasoning for liking this is that, I mean, Hangarback Walker's in the format, and That could make any card good, and I like the synergy there. It's a 5 mana, so it's kind of decent on curve. You can kind of go Hangerback Walker in the early game. You can lean on Siege Rhino in the mid game and kind of lean on this later on. It deals with problematic cards like Ojutai. Ojutai attacks. You can sack a creature, get rid of a couple creatures, get rid of it. So it does have a good amount of utility on it, and it's pre-ordering for 99 cents right now. Another one that I like is Nissa's Renewal. I know there's been a huge amount of hype around ramp-style cards right now. We've seen price movement on Shaman of the Forgotten Ways, See the Unwritten, obviously the forerunner of all that hype, and to a lesser extent, like Sword of the Animus, Animus Awakening. But I really like Nissa's Renewal, and you mentioned this too, Doug. When we're talking about Landfall, there's going to be cards that are basically turning Landfall, like the first time, into spells. And for 6 mana, I think you're getting a lot in 7 life and 3 basic lands into the battlefield. So 6 mana might not be that much. I don't know if it's going to battle See the Unwritten. So, again, I'm not super, super excited about it, but it's a card to watch. Also pre-ordering at 99 cents.
Yeah, someone on our forums was talking about Animus Awakening, which is the green X spell.
Yep.
And I think that and See the Unwritten and Animus I keep forgetting, Nissa's Renewal. I keep confusing these cards with each other. I think we're going to see a lot of competition for the top end of the curve in these green decks. 6 mana, do you want 3 tap basics and 7 life, or do you want 2 giant monsters? I mean, 2 giant monsters is the obvious better choice, because obviously you're going to ramp into giant monsters anyway, so why not just slam them onto the battlefield for without paying retail for me and get a 2-for-1?
Yeah, it makes
sense.
So,
like, I want to like this card. And I think it really depends on what the powerful land cards in the 1 through 3 spots look like. Are there any landfall cards like Lotus Cobra? If Lotus Cobra comes back, by the way, I'm going to lose my mind. Just, that's going to be amazing. I love that card.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're seeing things like to make a ramp deck work with landfall, to make hitting 3 basic lands more than going from 6 to 9 mana. It really depends. Like, we have to treat these like these landfall triggers like kicker. So in that regard, I don't think we know enough about the set to pre-order a card like this at $1. I think it's got equal chance of being a garbage rare or a playable rare. And then, like, corner case playable rares in a set like this, just like in cons, you know, that's why Mantis Rider's $1. It's because it's a corner case playable card, not a single color format staple or dual land or something to that effect. So yeah. I think $1 pre-order is correct for this from the point of view of the merchant, but as a speculator or a buyer or a trader, I don't think there's going to be any need to jump on the bandwagon. It's a card that looks like it's going to be a bulk rare that ends up actually being good, but it's not being priced as a bulk rare, it's being priced correctly. So I don't know, it's one of those things where, like, if you want to feel clever and say, I told you so, then yeah, be like, this card is good, say it to yourself and be happy, but I wouldn't be pre-ordering any.
Right, and that's why, like, nothing really is super exciting for me to really pull the trigger on. I might lean towards the Brood Butcher, but yeah, there's nothing too exciting for me at this point. I would need to see more of the set right now, and other than really the three cards we mentioned, there's nothing really else exciting to me.
So real quick, let me ask you guys, pre-orders, buy or sell, Gideon, $22.
So if this was under 20, I think I'd like it better. I don't know how much upside it has at over 20, 22.49 it's currently at. So at 22.49, I mean, you're banking on this going over 30.
I like this at 15. I'm not comfortable with it at 22 because we don't have a demonstrable proven deck that this fits into.
What about Ulamog at the same price?
Hell no.
I don't like Ulamog at that price either.
Hell no?
Hell no.
Again, unless this coming...
No, and then there's hell no. Why hell no?
It's a good card. Like, it's a nice, big, giant monster to ramp into. Are you jamming 4 of them into your deck? Or, I don't know. I mean, are you I don't even know what's in the rest of the set. Is this going to be the premier card? There could be something else at Mythic that just totally blows us out of the water.
You know, I can see the Unwritten into this guy on turn 5 or something, but I don't get the juiciest part, which is the two Vindicates. So is there a way for me to hardcast this, pay retail, and get the two Vindicates early on consistently? I'm really liking this, but I don't see this card right now at that price.
No, not at $22.49.
Well, I know that we've looked at a lot of spoilers today. We've talked about a lot of the early buzz about Battle for Zendikar, but I know that there's going to be a lot more coming out. I'm hoping that they're going to print an Eldrazi spawn. What are the Eldrazi Citizen? What tokens do we make? Eldrazi Sapperlings?
Scions.
Eldrazi, yeah. Scions.
I like Citizens.
I'd like to think of orderly Eldrazi Citizens. You know, we may see something like Awakening Zone that makes Scion tokens, and it's going to look a lot better Blossom. That will be terrible for Magic, but that will be awesome.
I would love Awakening Zone right now.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see anything coming even near that. But holding out hope
it's going to be a 5-drop, like, Assemble the Legion. I think at 5, it seems like a great engine, but it's not the kind of thing that you're going to use to ramp yourself. Awakening Zone was at least cheap enough to warrant running out on turn 2 or 3.
And it failed Eldrazi Monument. We don't have any great synergies like that here. But if we do get a card like that, rest assured, you'll hear about it on the podcast. I hope you guys will join us next week to listen in. Next week, if all proves out right, we are going to be talking about a really new, innovative pre-ordering strategy for buying futures options. Chaz and I and Kelly are going to be experimenting, investigating with Silver the next week. If it pans out, we'll tell you more about it. So, until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And you've been listening to the QS Cast.